Writer and activist Bryn Tannehill is here to talk about her new book, Everything You Wanted to Know About Trans, But Were Afraid to Ask, and give us her spin on our LGBTQ issues. Hi, Bryn.
Hello. Thank you for having me on.
To begin with, what's your spin on the Trump administration's attempt to erase our trans community?
So, first off, I would ask people to look at what legal authors like Shannon Minter are saying, which is essentially that this has very minimal short-term impact because it's very specifically pointed at Title IX of the Education Amendments Act of 1972 for gender equality in education and for the Affordable Care Act. These things are already tied up in litigation. But what people should understand is that this is part of a longer-term long-game effort by the Trump administration in concert with anti-LGBT hate groups like the Family Research Council, Alliance Defending Freedom, and Heritage Foundation to marginalize transgender people and enact the plan put forward by the Family Research Council in 2015 to essentially morally legislate transgender people out of public life. So in the short run, not a huge change, but it's signals where they're going and how they are going to do it in order to enact the Family Research Council's plan.
Tell us about your new book.
So my new book is Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Trans, But Were Afraid to Ask. And I've been writing on trans issues, and I've been very reactive to things that are going on in the news where something pops up and there's a public debate about transgender people, and most of it's pretty uninformed, and it's not transgender people that are dominating the conversation. It's cisgender people, i.e. non-transgender people, talking about transgender people. And as I went over the years, I jumped into all of these arguments after doing research and finding out about them and trying to put forward the best trans perspective I could on individual issues. And this book covers pretty much everything from trans 101 to constitutional civil rights law to media representation, to religion, to politics, to healthcare, to myths about transgender people in healthcare, to mental health for transgender people. It covers all of the big areas that are part of the public debate now and tries to do it from a readable but academic standpoint.
What was your inspiration for writing it?
So I'm going to tell a story because this is a story of how I got to the end of this book. When I first started writing back in 2011, I got in touch with Jenny Boylan about writing, and her first piece of advice was, if you think you're going to write the great transgender memoir that changes everything, just stop right there. Do something different. And so I did. I started writing about the things that I thought people wanted to know about, the things that I thought people were misinformed about, the things that I thought people needed to know about that they weren't hearing about elsewhere. And I used a style that was very much my own, rather than trying to imitate anyone else. And I'm an analyst, my day job, and so my pieces tended to be very analytical and persuasive and try and look at things from all the angles I could. And after years and years of writing, people started telling me, you should write a book. And I'm like, okay, great, what should it be about? And I would get this suggestion and that suggestion. And eventually one of my friends on Facebook gave the Seinfeld answer of, what if it was a book about nothing? And that was meant as a joke, but it kind of captured the, well, what if I made this book about everything instead, taking the fact that nobody had ever written a book that covered such a broad range of topics about life as a transgender person in the United States in a very broad context. And I went and I looked and researched, and nobody had ever done anything like this before. There's some phenomenal books on very much narrower topics, like Julia Serrano's work, Whipping Girl, on transgender people and feminism, but nothing this broad. And that was kind of my inspiration to start taking my works and turning them into a book that would educate people on a broad spectrum of transgender issues. And that's how it kind of came to be.
What do you hope to accomplish with your work?
So what I'd like to have is a work out there that has solid enough academic credentials and has had enough subject matter expert input put into it, that there is a reliable Bible, if you will, on different transgender issues and topics and points of conversation, including transgender athletes and the necessity of health care and the myths and what's going on in the courts, because there's so much misinformation. and I wanted it to be accessible to both transgender people and to cisgender audiences, which is why it starts out at the very, very basic level of, okay, what is transgender? What is intersex? What is sex? What is gender? Right? And build from there. So if you took a cisgender person who wanted to be an ally but didn't know very much, if they went from end to end on this, at the end, they would be a near subject matter expert on a wide variety of areas and also be able to refer back to the best information available when engaging in debate. This was meant to be a sort of a book that if you are coming out or if you need to provide information to family members who don't quite understand or, you know, hearing misinformation, that you can point to this book and find it within this book and say, well, actually, here's what the experts say. Here's what these organizations say. Here's what the actual history on this is. Here is what the courts have said on this issue. To basically build a better educated populace on a wide variety of transgender issues and to provide something that answers most of the frequently asked questions about transgender people in American society as written by a transgender person.
What is your personal commitment to LGBTQ civil rights?
So my start kind of is my coming out to myself in the mid-2000s. I was active duty military at the time. I had known for a long time that I had gender dysphoria but thought I could bury it. That doesn't work out so well in the long run. At that point, I was married and had kids and a military career, and I didn't know where to go from there. And I had nowhere to go. Don't Ask, Don't Tell was still in place. None of the major organizations had anything for transgender people in the military. I couldn't talk to a doctor. I couldn't talk to a psychologist. I had to stay firmly rooted in the closet. And eventually, I left active duty and left the reserves. For the inactive reserves or the individual ready reserves in order to transition. And I never got to put back my military career back together. So I started coming in towards the end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell with the implementation of the repeal. And I got my start really working on the transmilitary issue. But the transmilitary issue is tied to so many other things. It was tied to marriage. For a long time, I had to be male for one purpose, to make sure that my family got access to health care, because my corporation wouldn't recognize my marriage if I was a woman. They wouldn't provide health care to my kids if they didn't recognize me as the parent. I had to fight for access to health care with my employer, and I did. I actually managed to get my company at the time to become the first Fortune 500 company that doesn't respond to the Human Rights Campaign Corporate Equality Index to actually start providing health care for trans employees. So there's a first there. I continue to do policy work on the trans military issue and at the same time writing about a wide variety of trans issues and trying to connect them to the LGBT community at large. One thing that I wish people understood was that if, and particularly lesbian, gay, and bisexual people who are cisgender, is that if the transgender movement fails, if we lose our rights, if we are successfully driven out of public life through policy, legislation, and impact litigation by groups like the Alliance Defending Freedom, lesbians and gays are next. If they can kick all the transgender people out of the military because they feel like it, they can bring back Don't Ask, Don't Tell. If they can rule that my marriage isn't valid, they can rule that your marriage isn't valid. If they can ban transgender people from bathrooms because the idea of sharing a bathroom with a transgender person scares straight people, guess what? During Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the primary argument was that sharing a bathroom or a shower or a locker room with a gay person scared straight people. And we can go straight back to that as justification for discrimination against lesbians and gays. This is a unified fight, whether we like it or not. The only difference is that we will go down first because we are the primary target now. And once we lose, if we lose, then the same methods, tactics, and impact litigation that took us down will be used to do the same thing to lesbians and gays in America. Make no mistake about it. The anti-LGBT hate groups haven't forgotten about lesbians and gays. They just are having to recognize that there is greater acceptance of lesbians and gays in our society and more protections of them, and are going for the low-hanging fruit first, which is us.
I couldn't agree with you more. With LGBTQ teens already 4 times more likely to attempt suicide than their heterosexual peers after facing bullying incidents, what advice would you have for these kids struggling with Trump's administration in these times?
I'm in a weird position as a Gen Xer. I came of age after the end of the plague years, the AIDS crisis in the 80s and early 90s. And I have kids of my own who are in grade school and just starting high school. And what is different from then until now is that there is increased acceptance and tolerance and support for LGBT youth over what there was 25, 30 years ago. And that's key. That's going to make a big difference going ahead because, yes, right now it feels like hate is winning. People who hate LGBT people have undue influence at the White House, the House, at the Senate, the courts, and they're trying to create conditions under which bullying and harassment are constitutionally protected, and that is absolutely terrifying. But as long as we create accepting environments, as long as we build allies, as long as we have people who are willing to stand up for us, and there are more and more, that is our great advantage this time around in the third wave, actually, of anti-LGBT animus in America. It started with the Lavender Scare, then it happened in the AIDS crisis, and we're experiencing a third wave right now. And the flow of history isn't always in one direction. There are times when things get better. There are times when things get worse. But the underlying improved societal attitudes towards LGBT people, that's not changing. The demographics say that that's only going to get better over time as, frankly, the people who hate us most age out and fade away, and millennials and iGen or Gen Z become the dominant demographic forces in America. And honestly, they don't care about sexual orientation and gender identity. This is a war being waged by an older generation. And I hate to say that we're going to have to wait them out, but we can at least anticipate a better future where we've moved on.
How can people get information about you and also your new book?
So my book is available on Amazon.com. You can pre-order it there. It'll be coming out in both hard copy and for Kindle. It's $19.95, so you can buy it on a budget. My webpage, BrynTannehill.com, if you need to get in touch with me. I have set up so that you can email me from my website. You can also find some of my old articles, and you can find articles that have information that weren't contained in my book. There's enough information, honestly, enough articles that I've done, probably fill up 3 good-sized books.
What other projects are you working on?
So I'm continuing to work as a board member for SPARTA and with the Trans United Fund, also as a board member. We recommend transgender candidates and strong ally candidates and endorse them. SPARTA works to take care of transgender military service members and also to represent their interests within DOD and within the government. The other thing I'm working on is I'm working on another book that takes a look at the political systems in America and how they're broken and why. And this is a small LGBT focus just because some of the ills that are plaguing America today manifest themselves as anti-LGBT animus and loss of civil rights. But there's lots of groups that are losing their civil rights right now. We're losing voting rights. We're losing rights for immigrants. We're seeing expanded executive power. We're seeing corporations gaining power while labor unions and workers lose it. So there is a broad swath of civil rights that are being eroded. And at the same time, we see things like wealth inequality being driven by bad fiscal and economic policy, which is driven by conservatives who work hand in hand with businesses who want these things and packing the courts to get courts that are less friendly to labor and to workers. And at the same time, their base, the white evangelical religious conservatives, very much believe that wealth is a sign of God's favor. So they are very much in favor of policies that support corporations and the wealthy. And this has created a closed-loop system that makes it very, very hard for millennials and people of color to get ahead. And at the same time, everybody's losing and only a very small group of people are winning. And they are working furiously to rig the system such that they don't have to play the game again. They won once, and they don't ever need to win again because they've gerrymandered and vote suppressed their way to a permanent majority. And that's something that we need to be very, very concerned about. And combined that with rising wealth inequality and it being harder and harder for people to be better off than their parents and changing demographics. We are less and less a white Christian nation every year, but the people controlling our government are pretty much exclusively white and Christian. So what happens when you have a government that's essentially unelected, representing people that don't look like them or believe like them in a way that is hostile to the people that they theoretically represent but don't, while economic conditions for those people deteriorate? That's a volatile situation, and my next book is going to explore all of these questions and dynamics.
Is there a question you wish people would ask you?
So there's a question that people ask me all the time, which is, okay, great, things are falling apart. What do we do? And my answer is a little bit of tough love in the sense that I can't lie to people and tell them things are going to be just fine and things are going to be totally normal again in 2.5 years when there's another election and we vote out Trump. It's going to take a long time to recover from all the judges that have been put on the court. It's going to be a long time to recover from all the loss of voting rights and worker rights. We're going to get some really adverse court decisions. But in the meantime, the things that we can do are we can vote. Vote, 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 vote. Republicans don't want us to vote. They have been captured on tape in Georgia by the governor candidate. They're saying they don't want black people to vote, and they don't want queers to vote, and they don't want Latinos to vote. They just don't want us at the ballot box because they know if there is high turnout, they lose. And it will take time to turn things around, but we don't start turning things around until we change who's in office. And the way we do that is voting. But at the same time, in the meantime, where we have very little power as court decisions essentially favor the religious right and corporations over us to a very, very high degree, we need to start thinking more like insurgents and POWs who are living in resistance to a set of laws and governance that is innately hostile to us. And I'm not saying do illegal things, because the code of conduct for POW says you will not violate the Geneva Convention, you won't attack your captors, you won't do illegal things. But there are ways to make the lives of the people who are oppressing us unpleasant. And when we don't have power to do anything in the courts, when we have limited power over our state legislatures due to gerrymandering, there are ways to make things uncomfortable for the other side. And an example would be the wrestler in Texas, where they wouldn't let this trans boy wrestle against boys, so they forced him to compete in girls' division, and he won everything. And this created a really, really awkward situation, and nobody was happy with the result. But when nobody is happy with the result, that's motivation to change things for the better for even the people who really don't like us. And that's something that we've seen with POWs, who can make the lives of their captors unpleasant and unhappy and absolutely make them crazy. An example would be in Vietnam when Admiral Stockdale was going to be used for propaganda purposes, and he asked if he could shave. And they gave him a bucket of water, some soap, and a razor, and he proceeded to shave one half of his head. During the Korean War, American POWs pretended to ride invisible motorcycles around. No kidding. And it made their guards so crazy that these people were acting nuts that they actually had to issue a decree confiscating the invisible motorcycles. And that's my point, is that finding ways to make people crazy, your oppressors crazy, is great. And there's modern examples of it using the internet and using digital media and capturing them doing and saying horrible things or just being ridiculous, like Sacha Baron Cohen's This Is America. And it's not hard to goad these ultra-conservatives beholden to the religious right to do things and say things that are absolutely nutty, crazy, and awful. And I think that's something we need to make greater use of.
Do you have a favorite quote or mantra to get you through difficult times?
So I've got three favorite quotes, and I'll start with the first two that came from my uncle Rocky, who was a colonel in the Army. And his, one of his quotes was, "The truth has changed again." And I can be convinced. And this philosophy of flexibility and adaptability and changing as the circumstances around you change is absolutely vital to what we're doing now, especially as there's the horror of the day coming out of the Trump administration. Yes, plan ahead, but be ready to change that plan as circumstances change and be open to new ideas. The one that gets me through is kind of a mantra for myself in my daily life is work for the best. Be prepared for the worst. And either way, things that will end up okay. You did your best to make the world better. If things don't work out for you and you are prepared, even when things go wrong, you're still in the best position possible to salvage the situation. And that's a pretty good philosophy for how to deal with such trying times.